Radio.com.
Do you ever feel like you're in mentality hell? You have your doctors and or your support systems in place, but you are still in pain. And then, who is your biggest abuser? Could it now be the one staring back at you in the mirror? To be or not to be accountable is really the question when making the journey to get past the pain of misuse. TobeAccountable.com, practical accountability coaching, specializing in mentality rehabilitation and restoration. A proud sponsor of Soul Sista Enterprise.
Trace Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trace Rio, our only limit is your imagination. Trace Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at TraceRioSilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at WesternWishes.org.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, She's Gone Country with Becky Christensen Phillips.
Her bags to try her hand, says this might be my last chance. She's gone country, look at them boots. She's gone country, back to her roots. She's gone country, a new kind of suit. She's gone country.
Welcome to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen Phillips, and I just want to welcome you to the show tonight. If this is your first time tuning in, we just want to say thank you and just remind everybody that there's really two ways to be able to join us here on She's Gone Country with Becky, and that's either one, getting a free Blog Talk account at www.blogtalkradio.com. You can just go on there, sign up for a free Blog Talk account, and from there you can stream and listen from your internet or from your smartphone, whichever way you want to do it, or you can always call in and listen to the show via your cell phone or your landline phone at 347-857-3760. So if you are listening tonight and you do have some questions as we get into our interview this evening, just know that all you need to do is just press 1 to go into the host queue, and my producer, Maria Di Giovanni, will greet you there, and then she will let us know that you're on the air or on the call, and we will bring you on the air just as soon as we know you're there. So with that being said, I just want to welcome to the show tonight with me is, of course, my lovely co-host, Becky Christensen. Becky, are you there?
I am, Becky. Good evening, everyone.
We are really excited about tonight's show. We've had the pleasure of, we were going to be bringing this guest on a couple, 2-3 weeks ago, and just due to circumstances beyond our control and his control, conflict of scheduling, we had to reschedule him for tonight, and that's okay. We had a great interview. And so tonight we are blessed and honored and excited to welcome. Not only is he a 3-time Sierra Circuit Rodeo champion, not only has he been to the finals, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. I'll let him discuss that. He is well-known throughout the PRCA, through the PBR, and just all over anyone that knows anything about rodeo. He was my hero in the bull riding events growing up, and I'm excited to bring him on the show tonight. From Stevensville, Texas, we are welcoming Ted News to the show. Ted, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much. I'm excited. We'll have a good time.
Well, first, before we get super far into our introductions, if you would please tell our audience, because we have listeners, Blog Talk is not just a specific station, so to speak. We're worldwide, and people can come on later on and listen to the archives so they can listen live. Tell us a little bit about who Ted Neust is.
Well, in the beginning, when I was a child, I was a couple of weeks old, I was adopted. I don't know how many people we have here that, were adopted when they were a child, but I was very blessed as a child. My mom and dad, Alberta and John Neus, adopted me when I was 2 weeks old. And when the situation, whenever I came into the world, wasn't what you would call perfect. My mother, my birth mother, whenever her husband, which was not my father, but was married to her, he was in prison, and she got pregnant while he was in prison, and she knew it wasn't going to be a good situation if I was around whenever he got out. So she let me go, and my mom and dad, Alberta and John Neus, raised me. And they gave me a great home. And as a child, all I wanted to do is, they bought me a pony when I was like 5 years old, and all I wanted to do is ride the pony every single day. I just wanted to be a cowboy, since I was probably almost big enough to walk, and that's how it all started.
Well, Ted, this is Vicki, and so you were born in Manteca, California, is that correct?
Okay. French Camp is right next. Yeah, it's right next to Manteca.
Okay. I just remember being out on the West Coast, and when we used to all rodeo out there, they'd always say, well, Ted News from Manteca. But tell us, Ted, what first interested you in rodeo? Who were your heroes, and who did you look up to back then?
As a child, as I grew a little older, and my mom and dad took me to the, horse shows and gymkhanas, and I was just kind of a wild kid, But I looked up to, Larry Mahan. I didn't know a lot about rodeo, but I just get to watch it a little bit on TV. And I actually started roping. I roped a long time before I ever rode bulls or got on a bull. But we roped every day as kids. And then how I got to riding with some friends of mine when I was in school, I was about the third or fourth grade, brought this picture to school of him riding a steer. And I thought, man, I could do that. And so we were, at home roping, and I told my friends, hey, I want to get on that steer and ride it. And I got on, and it was extremely easy for me. It was just like really easy for me to stay on. I just had that balance that I learned you know, when I was a kid riding that pony around. So it was very easy for me. And then one thing led to another, and I played around, and then I finally went to a bull riding school. I went to Larry Mahan's bull riding school when I was about 14 years old. And, after that, he was my hero, and just really got attracted to riding bulls. At the start of the school, I didn't stay on too good, but by the end, I rode this bull that turned back and spun right in the gate. And Larry Mahan, this was like a huge confidence builder. He walked up and he says, "You keep improving like that, and one day you're going to be a world champion." And I thought, wow. You know, so I was very excited about rodeo.
Wow. Oh, wow, Ted. And you know what? Larry was right, because you have been a world champion. You were 1985 TRSA world champion bull rider. Is that correct?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, yes. And you know, Ted, this is Becky, and, you know, I remember, and I think this is something that, you know, a lot of people that are watching rodeo may not necessarily understand. And I just remember, and I mean nothing by this, but I always remember thinking, boy, he's a little guy to be staying on those bulls. When I was a kid, I'm like, because that's what, I just remember watching you, and I just remember going, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he can stay on those big old bulls. And so I kid you not, every rodeo I would look for your name on the roster, because I wanted to see you and I wanted to see Charlie stay on these bulls. What is the special sauce about, you know, someone of your stature and these big bulls? I mean, is it the toughness? Is it a mindset? Is it just strength? What is it?
I don't really know. It's just, I'll tell you what it's all about. It's all about passion. I developed a passion for it at an early age. And because of my size, I played football and basketball and all that when I was a kid, but my chances of being the very best in the world for my size was not just, you know, just really wasn't in the cards. Because I'm 5'5", and I weigh 160 pounds. You know, just bull rider seemed to, you know, fit my size really well. You know, another hero of mine, you know, was Donnie Gay after I started riding. And Donnie, he's not a whole lot bigger than me. And then Charlie and I, we started rodeoing together, and it was just we learned how to be positive. We both went to Gary Lafue's and spent some time with Gary Lafue, and we got introduced to a book called Psycho Cybernetics, and it was all about being positive and believing in yourself. And I really took that stuff to heart, and it really, you know, changed my life and put me on the right course and the direction that I needed to be on by setting goals for myself. You know, you set all this stuff up in your mind, and then you start living it out. And that's how things really start to happen. And it's more based off of God's principles than it is, you know, something that man made up, because God's word's been around for so long. And when we have hope, what is hope? Hope is always in the future. It's always we're always hoping for something. It's always out in front of us. We don't have it yet, but if we hope, that's our faith in action. We're hoping for this. And then when you hope for it long enough, and you have enough patience and enough endurance, and, you know, to keep hoping for it no matter what happens, then that's your faith in action. And that's what God says. He says, you know, what is faith? What is faith? It's things hoped for, not yet seen. Well, my whole life has been like that. You know, it's just, that's how it's been for me. And it took me a long time to realize this stuff and how we have to mature in our minds and in our relationship with God. And as we mature and we start to see things more like God sees things, then we understand. You know, it just, sometimes we don't understand. When we're young, we don't really understand. We're going 9-0, and we're going by all kinds of good things, and we're passing a lot of stuff up. But, you know, we think we're doing it right. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're a little older and you go, wow, man, I was doing that right. Wow, God was blessing me because I was believing it. It all starts to make sense.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does.
It does.
Well, Ted, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and when
okay.
we come back, I would like to just keep continuing on this conversation with you. I know Aunt Vicky's got some questions, and I know that my mom, Kathy, is down in, Arizona, but I'm not sure if it's Stanfield or Mesa, but she was set to be on hear the show tonight. She was dying to hear your interview, and I invited her to come on and say hello. So when we come back, I want to bring my mom on. So, Mom, make sure you press 1 when we get back so you can be brought into the host queue, and we will be right back.
ForRadio.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org. Since 1997, Tres Rios Silver has been providing custom handmade trophy buckles at an affordable price. Family owned, your business is important to us. We are big enough to meet your needs, but small enough to provide that personal touch. Give us a call today at 800-550-7535 and speak with someone on our design staff. Or go online to www.tresriosilver.com. Let us help you design your next trophy buckle. That's Tres Rios Silver, Llano, Texas.
ForRadio.com.
Welcome back to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen Phillips, and I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in with us tonight. We have the honor and privilege of visiting with Ted News, who is a world champion bull rider. He is a man of God. He's a mentor. He has a beautiful family, two boys and a wife, and he's residing in Stephensville, Texas, and he's just got so much to share with everything that he has done in his life and everything that he has passion and belief in, and I'm just excited that he has agreed to come on the show tonight. So he is here with us. I have my co-host, Vicki Christensen, on the line, and I am also bringing on the line right now from Arizona my most wonderful, beloved mama, Kathy, because I know she was really excited to know that Ted was on tonight, and she made a special point to make sure that she was able to hear the show tonight. So, Mom, are you there?
I'm here, Becky. I'm here, Vicki and Ted. It's so good to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks.
I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you, Vicki.
Now, Ted, my mom actually lives down in Phoenix, and she's down there with my Aunt Marty and husband Dale Smith. So they're all down there, and they're big supporters, but I know she just absolutely, you know, adores Mr. News. So, Ted, well, I'm going to let you go ahead and take the floor, and then, Mom, if there's anything that you, you know, want to ask or join in the conversation, please feel free to do so. But Ted was sharing with the audience a little bit about his childhood growing up before he went to break and you know, what it took to get him to the ranks of professional bull rider. And you know, I just want to go back to that, Ted. You shared with us, and that's just something new that I didn't know. I didn't know you were adopted. So that's pretty amazing. And I know that when you're raised, you know, in the lifestyle that we have, the country lifestyle, and you grow up in the era that we grew up in, I'm sure, and I can almost say without a shadow of a doubt, there's quite a bit of adversity that you probably came up against as you were, you know, making your climb to the top. And so maybe you could just continue sharing with our audience, you know, what did you do to get through that? And, I mean, you were traveling and rodeoing back in the day when Charlie Sampson, Donnie Gay. I think you, at that time, were also competing with Tuff Hedman, Lane Frost, Jim Sharp. So there was some heavy competition going on. And, you're talking about, your belief system and your hope. So share with us a little bit some of the adversities and how you came over that and what it took to get to that top rank.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say anybody that can qualify for the National Finals Rodeo is extremely talented and extremely tough-minded, because when you're out there on the road and, you're doing everything in your power to try to make the finals and, you may not have enough money, your money starts running low and you start drawing bad and you're not winning. And, what does a guy do to overcome that adversity? You got to have something solid as a rock behind you. Otherwise, whenever those tough times come, if you're not prepared, then, you'll either give up or you'll quit. And so I always had things to fall back on. I believed in myself. I learned, like I said, how to trust and believe in myself. And then I, got connected more to God and developed a relationship with Him. And then I started, using His scriptures instead of just what I would come up with whenever those times would come, because it's just extremely tough way of life. I mean, people don't really understand. We pay our own entry fees. We pay all of our expenses, okay? And you have to be extremely good to beat the competition out there, because the competition is tough. And then, you have to deal with all this other stuff, that the draw and the money and, all the traveling. It's just, it adds up. And unless you're extremely passionate about rodeoing, you won't make it. And I just thank God, I had that passion.
Ted, this is Vicki, and, your career has been nothing short of phenomenal. I mean, you joined the PRCA in 1980, and that very same year, you were the Bull Riding Rookie of the Year. And I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, 6 years going to the NFR, and I really think that a lot of our listeners don't realize, we go over these titles and everything that you've accomplished, but I don't think they realize the day-to-day and the faith that you and trust that you had to place in the Lord. How many rodeos a year would you say, I know there's a limit, but when you first started, how many rodeos a year did you make? How many?
Oh, man, I mean, in the beginning, in the early 80s, there was no limit, and Donnie Gay was, the world champion, and I felt like the only chance that I had to beat Donnie Gay was enter as many rodeos and get to as many as possible. And I would go to around 140 to 145 rodeos a year, and that meant I probably entered about 170, because I only wanted to go get on bulls that I could win money on. If I couldn't win on a bull and I knew that he had a reputation of not bucking, well, I would turn him out and I'd enter another rodeo over top so that I would have a choice. I could, I'd go get on the best bull, wherever it was. And it's just not an easy life. That's why you have to be so passionate about it. I can remember, being 18, 19 years old, right out of high school, and rodeoing full time. It's a big old world out there. It's very challenging. The whole deal is very challenging. And I can just say that if you don't have them goals set and you're not really strong minded and determined, it's just not going to happen. And when a guy can do it, it is extremely rewarding. I mean, the first time I made the National Finals Rodeo was in 1982, Charlie and I, we started rodeoing that year, and that year Charlie won the world championship in 1982. Well, he had a year that from, Denver till the national finals, he never lost the lead for the world championship. He just had a great year. He won almost every major winter rodeo that year, from Denver to Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, Houston, and he had a huge lead after the winter was over, and that never changed throughout the whole year. So that really inspired me. That was my first NFR, and then the finals moved to Las Vegas in 1985, and that's when I won the world championship. And even that, going into the finals, I was $20,000 behind Tuff Hedeman, and at that point, Tuff was almost couldn't buck him off. He rode so well, and so things didn't look too good for me to be the world champion. But I just had this belief inside myself that I was going to be the world champion, and that, I didn't care what it looked like. I was only going to believe what I wanted to believe about it, and what God says about it, the situation. And I just believed it. And by the time that the rodeo was over, I was in the lead, and I'd rode 9 bulls that year at the finals, and I won the championship.
Well, this is Becky, and as I'm sitting here listening to you talk about that, I mean, it's just it's so fun to go back and think about all the times that I've seen those clips on TV and all the different times that you guys competed against each other. And, I'm looking over this, the bio that we have created for you, and if I'm not mistaken, I'm showing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 15 years you qualified for the NFR,
no,
is that correct?
I qualified 14 times in a row. I have a record of consistency. I qualified for more NFRs in a row than anyone. Wacy Cathy qualified for 14, but mine were consecutive. From the first time in 82 till I quit I actually retired in the year of 96, but I quit before the finals. So the last NFR I went to was in 95. So from 82 to 95, I never missed the finals.
Holy moly, that is an amazing accomplishment.
Totally unreal. Well, Ted, this is Vicki, and before we move on, one interesting note, the year that you won your world championship in 1985, where you just got done, telling our listeners that, that Tuff had been ahead most of the year. But on our bio, we have a little side note here that says, in round 10, it was Charlie Sampson that pulled your rope, and you rode, and Tuff bucked off, and you ended up, of course, winning the world championship with over $108,000, and Tuff won just a little over $102,000. So you and Charlie Sampson, your good buddy and our great friend, we just love Charlie, y'all have a special bond together.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was one thing that really, whenever you have a friend that will really pull for you with all of his heart, That is a special bond, and I feel like, that's how Charlie felt, and that's how I felt. We would always pull for each other. It didn't matter who won, as long as one of us was able to stay on. Bull riding is a little different than a lot of other events because of the element of danger. So the risk factor is so high. I mean, just like, in that last go-round at the finals that year, Lane Frost and I were the only two to make the whistle in the last go-round at the finals that year. But, it's like the only way you ride bulls is you gotta love it more than you love life. That's how I felt about riding bulls. I felt like if I couldn't ride bulls, I didn't care whether I lived because I loved it so much. And whenever you look at it like that, it changes a whole lot about fear, okay? Every time you get on one of those rank bulls that anything can happen. You make a mistake and anything can happen. We've seen that with Lane Frost and Brent Thurman and Glenn Keeley. These guys, they loved riding bulls as much as they love life. They put it all out there every time. And whenever you feel like that, you're going to be very good. That's the only way you can be very good. That's the only way you can be your very best, is have that kind of passion about something. Can you guys imagine this? What if we could love the way Jesus loved? How awesome would that be if we could love and have the passion that Jesus had? Think about that. Think about him carrying that cross. Think about the night before. He knew what was going to happen. He sweated blood. He knew what was going to happen. He loved us so much that he was going to go on with it no matter what. And I relate that. You know, I relate that to bull riding because that's how I felt at one time. That's how I felt about riding bulls. And whenever you have that kind of passion, great things are going to happen. But also, you can't, if God, you know what I always said? When it's our day to die, when we're going to take our last breath, that day, we're not getting out of it. When God says it's time to come home, we're leaving here, and we're not getting out of it. And I always felt that way about death. I thought, you know what? That's just part of life. And if I leave here doing what I love, so be it. I'm doing what I love. And we don't know when we're going to take our last breath. But you know what's so awesome? If we have that relationship with Christ, we know that when we leave here, we're headed to paradise. And if you believe that, with all your heart, that's the key. That's the key that will open the kingdom of heaven. And that's how I feel about it.
You know, Ted, this is Becky, and I think you're very, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you talk about that with the passion. And I was just going to ask you that. And we're going to have to take a break here pretty quick. But when we come back, you know, that was something that I was looking at as I was looking over your bio again, is what I'd like to talk about when we come back is, you know, you did. You watched, you know, two or three of your competitors and friends lose their life in this event, and it is very dangerous. And I'd just like to, you know, ask, you know, where along the way, when we come back, would you share with our listeners, did were you already really following the Lord at this point when Lane passed away, or did these things draw you close to that? I just would like to know, because that's a lot in that time frame of 6 or 7 years to see and experience what all of you bull riders did at that particular time. So when we come back, Ted Neuse will continue sharing his journey as a world champion bull rider, and we'll take some questions from our guests. We'll be back.
Do you ever feel like you're in mentality hell? You have your doctors and or your support systems in place, but you are still in pain. And then, who is your biggest abuser? Could it now be the one staring back at you in the mirror? To be or not to be accountable is really the question when making the journey to get past the pain of misuse. TobeAccountable.com. Practical accountability coaching, specializing in mentality rehabilitation and restoration. A proud sponsor of Soul Sista Enterprise.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Trust Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trust Rio's, our only limit is your imagination. That's Trust Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535 or find us on the web, trustriosilver.com. Proud to be part of She's Gone Country with Becky. Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
ForRadio.com.
Welcome back to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen Phillips, and I am here tonight with my co-host, Vicki Christensen, and we are visiting with world champion bull rider Ted Nuss. And we have just been spending the first half hour of the show just visiting with Ted about where he came from, how he grew up, how he came to rodeo, and the passion he's grown for that. And in the last portion of the half hour, we've really just been diving into what it was like, you know, traveling down that road as he tried to climb to the top and win that world champion title and all things that are bull riding and PRCA. And so, Ted, before we went to the break, you know, we were talking about passion and how much passion that it really requires to meet that goal and hit those goals that you have when you're, you know, entered in all these rodeos as a bull rider, in any event for that matter. And as we were talking earlier, you know, you said you hold the record right now for the most consecutive times qualifying for the NFR at 14, and that was from 1982 to 1995, and you retired in 96. And we were you know, relating that to, you know, the passion that you have for your, you know, for Christ and your walk with Him and how that, you know, that just correlated a lot to your built your faith up. And what I really would like to share with, have you share with the listeners is take us into, you know, that faith-building time for you. I mean, I don't know exactly when you really started serving Christ and running after Him. I don't know if it, you know, a lot of cowboys in the early 80s, I think we have a really we've had a move of God in the PRCA and in the rodeo realm over the last probably 15, 20 years. But I know there was a time when I was younger where it was just a different genre than it is now behind the scenes. And I remember as a little girl seeing a lot of things that weren't what you would call Christ-like. So I know that you experienced a lot with the finals and the things that you saw and the loss of some of your fellow competitors. Walk us through that and how you've come to be the man of God that you are today.
Well, like, you know, as long as we're here on earth and we live in the, you know, in these bodies that you know, we're going to make mistakes, and I realize that. And just like not only mistakes, we're going to make mistakes, you know, before the Lord and the way that He would have us live. But you know what's so awesome is it's like this. It's not about how many mistakes you made. It's not about how many buck-offs, how many times I got bucked off. It's not about that. It's about how fast I got up and how fast I recovered and how fast I got back out there and got after it. And it's the same way. God wants us, if we make a mistake, He wants us just to simply say, man, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. And you know what? He totally forgives us of those mistakes that we make in life. We cannot, listen to me, we cannot dwell on the negative past that we live. We cannot dwell on our buck-offs. We cannot dwell on when we made mistakes, because if we do, we will not think the right way. We will end up thinking negative and feeling down and out. That's how Satan wants us to think, that so that we will be defeated. So what we have to do, one thing that I did every time I bucked off, whenever I was even, you know, I would jump up as fast as I could off the ground and tell myself, I am a world champion. I'm going to be the world champion. And by me jumping up, and I kept telling myself, pretty soon I began to believe it. And whenever you go from hoping and thinking to really believing it deep in your heart, things begin to change. And then just like my walk is like yeah, I've made lots of mistakes in my life, but you know what? I know who my Creator is. I have a relationship with Jesus Christ. I know what He says about me, and that's what I'm going to stay focused on. And every time I make a mistake, I'm going to get up and I'm going to say, you know what? I am going to be with Jesus. I am going to make it to the kingdom. That's how I'm going to think, and that's what I'm going to believe until I take my last breath here.
I can definitely understand that passion and that love and that never give up desire, especially when you're following after Him and you look and you try not to look at all the things you've done in the past, because you know I can definitely relate to that. You know, and one of the things that you had on your Facebook that I thought was pretty awesome, it was a quote that you gave, and I posted it to our Facebook account. It says, "Never quit." That's one of the most important things about being a champion. You know, when you say never quit, tell us about that.
Well, it's just like, it's no different than, the Broncos losing, okay, yesterday. It's no different, okay? They went in there and they were expected to win. And see, that loss, now, they could leave the arena or the football field, and they could dwell on that. Where is that? What is that going to get them? Where is that going to take them? Now, you could jump up and you could say, you know what? I am the champ. I'm going to go home, and this little defeat here is not going to defeat me. I'm going to go home, and I'm going to improve, and I'm going to be better next year. I'm going to work harder than I've ever worked before in my life. I'm going to give it all I got. I'm going to dig deep down inside myself. And if it takes me working until I can't stay awake, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to work. I'm going to practice. I'm going to have so much confidence the next time I walk out on that football field, nobody is going to be able to beat me. And that's exactly what I did, you know. And I know that's what works. And that's how God wants us to think. We're not defeated. We're children of God. He created us. The Creator of the world created us. And with these minds, if we will properly feed our minds the right thoughts, there's nothing we can't do. He wrote it. It's written down.
Well, Ted, this is the key. And amen to that. And I mean, you walk the walk, and you've been there, and the faith that you bring to your life each and every day, I'm certain that that's one of the most important things that you can teach a beginning bull rider. We're going to kind of jump ahead here, Ted, and very quickly touch upon the fact that, you know, how awesome is it that you were inducted into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame in 2009? What a great accomplishment. But even more of an accomplishment, as I'm sure you'll agree, is that of your family, Ted. And I marvel every single day about your beautiful family. Tell us about Stephanie and the boys.
Well, there was a very long time in my life that I never really wanted a family. I was so into, myself that I never wanted a family. I've been married a couple of times, had a couple of failures, and I told Stephanie whenever we met when we started dating, I said I'll probably never get married again, I'll probably never have family, I'll never live in Texas, and now I have a family, I live in Texas, and I've never been so happy in my whole life. These boys, they are so awesome. I get everything that I've been able to learn and God has taught me is I'm trying to teach them those same things so that they're going to have a huge head start on where I came from in their life. They're going to have a huge head start. And if I would have missed this part of life, I would have been missing a very special part of life if I hadn't had this family, because this family means everything to me.
Oh, Ted, and what a beautiful family they are. You know, I was telling Becky, I think, earlier about Stephanie in, on Facebook, her morning cup of the word, and how I look forward to that. And it just touches my life and starts my day out in a special way. And then when I see, you know, see the boys and I see all of you together as a family, it's when we're really reminded about the truly important things in life. Tell us about Stephenville, Ted, and about your life there and what you're doing right now.
Well, Stephenville is a great cowboy town with all the cowboys and all the past world champions that live here. It's pretty awesome. You know, I could go to the bank and I might run into Tuff, or I might go on a trail ride over at Ty's Ranch, or you know, have Jim Sharp and his little boy come over and swim or ride ponies with us. And it's just an exciting place to be right now as far as raising a family. It's a pretty quiet little town, a lot of cowboys. And I just feel like Texas, it's such a – right now it's a lot better place than California to raise a family. There's a lot more people, like, that think the same way I think, you know, are here. They're not in California. And so I'm excited about being here. I'm really gotten myself – I told myself, when I got through riding bulls, that I wouldn't get involved in anything that didn't have the opportunity to make me, you know, a good living and good money. And I got involved in the stock market, and I'm also a real estate investor. And that's what I do now. And Stephanie's got a real estate license here in Stephenville. And we just look for deals. And, I want my boys to understand this really well so that, you know, I don't even know if I want them, you know, I just want them to find their passion, whether it's be a cowboy or snowboard or, you know, whatever it is. I just want them, I want to help them find their passion so that they will love life as much as I have and have the opportunity to be very happy in their lifetime. And that's my goal right now, is to do that and to help them and develop their minds so that, you know, when negative things happen to them, they won't be defeated by those little negative things that can happen day in and day out, and they'll learn how to, you know, maintain a positive attitude no matter what happens to them.
Well, Ted, this is Becky, and, you know, I was looking at your website, your Facebook page and your wife's website, Facebook page, and the fact that you're real estate professionals, that's awesome. I'm actually, my son is going to start an internship down at our office this month, for his senior project. And I also am in the real estate industry. So I work for a broker. So it's interesting because it is. It's a good skill to teach your kids to go into, and if they have passion for it, great. But talking about passion, the question I have for you is, do you think that passion is something that is just within a person, or do you think that someone can, quote-unquote, discover and create a passion for something just by trying it, and it builds and builds and builds? Or because I think some people would say that you can't teach passion, it's just within someone, or others, or, you know, it's just a natural thing. What do you think about that?
This is what I think. I think anything that... you know, if you find your passion, this is how I look at it. If you find your passion, you don't care how many hours it takes to get good, you're just going to do it. And it doesn't matter how much money you're going to make, you just do it because you love it. And you love it so much you can't put it down. It's on your mind day in and night and day. You eat it, sleep it, and you breathe it. And whenever you get hooked up to that, man, you can't fail. God just, it's when faith and passion and perseverance and patience, you got to have patience. God teaches you through patience. You know, we don't get everything we want right now, That's just not how it works. And what it does is it builds character in us. And so if you find that deal, you find that passion, and you keep living it, and you don't quit when times get a little bit tough, man, there's the sky's the limit. You can be anything you want. And that's why it's so important for me to help my boys find their passion. I'll know it. They'll know it. When we find it, they're going to know it because they'll be consumed by it. And that's what I'm looking for.
Well, that's awesome. Ted, I know you retired from bull riding in 1996. And, you said you're down there in Stephenville and you're close still to some of your competitor friends. I think you said Ty Murray and Seth Edelman. And I know Cody's up in Oklahoma. And you guys are all in that southern region. Were you part of, if you'd share with our listeners, were you part of those core group of cowboys that branched off from the PRCA and started forming the PBR?
Oh, yes. Back when Bull Riders Only was in full swing, when they were really rolling, Bull Riders Only, before the PBR, they wanted me and Tuff and all the other guys that were on top of the Cody, all the guys that were on top at that time, Jim Sharp, they all wanted us to sign a contract that we would only go to their bull ridings. And we said, no way, we're not going to do that. Matter of fact, it made us want to form our own association and say, look, if it's not sanctioned by the PBR, we're not going. And whenever we did that and we all stuck together, it just, you can see where it took us. It took us exactly where we wanted to go. It went beyond our wildest dreams. And, we sold that company for a lot of money. And it made all of us financially, set. And I don't know, it just all came together at the right time. And, I feel like the Lord had his hand on us and helped us develop that company. And it was just another dream come true.
Amen to that. I mean, it has exploded. And, and with that said, gosh, we could talk for so many more hours, so I know I'm going to have you come back on, and maybe next time your wife can join you on the show. But one thing I wanted to ask you before we end out the hour in the next 3 minutes is, since the PBR has grown the way it has grown, if you could speak, because I know there's several different levels, and I know up here in Spokane, we just went to the PBR on the 18th of last month, I think, and there's been such a shift in the stock from our day to now, where everything's so genetically engineered and the animals are so, they're just bred to buck. But then when you go down to like the touring levels, you have these really fresh bull riders out of the gate that are just trying to get their feet wet and qualify, or some are trying to re-qualify. What would you speak to those cowboys that are in that first touring level that are having just a heck of a time staying on because these bulls are such a high caliber of bucker? What would you speak to them and encourage them, and what words would you leave to them for advice as we close out the hour?
Well, what I teach at my schools is we practice for one reason, and the only reason why you practice is to build confidence. You can't build confidence if you're getting bucked off. So you must get on bulls that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you can stay on when you're in the practice pen. Second, if you are having doubting negative thoughts whenever you're standing on the back of the bucking sheets, if you're thinking, man, I hope I can ride this bull. I hope I don't get hooked. Man, God, I'm really kind of scared, If you're having those kind of thoughts, you need to go to the practice pen, and you need to practice just like you do in your mind until those thoughts disappear and you feel like you can't be bucked off and you feel like you can't be hurt and you feel like you are the very best. And that's where you need to stay, in the practice pen, until you feel that away. If you feel any other way, then you need to go back to the practice pen.
Well, those are great words of wisdom, and I think you're absolutely right. And Ted, you know, we have to close out the hour, and I'm so blessed that you were able to come on today. I hope that we can have you back again real soon, and I just appreciate you more than you'll know. And Vicki, do you have any closing words before you go?
I do. Ted, thank you. You being with us this evening has been such a blessing. Thank you for sharing your life and your thoughts. And we're going to close out tonight's show with a little Cowgirl Logic and Crystal Lions. Thank you all so much for joining us.
As with all Blue Heeler dogs, every time you go out on a horse, they got to go. One day I was long trotting my horse and I could see Nick way up ahead of me lavishly rolling in something. When I got there I was dismayed to find it was a ripe, heat-bloated, sun-baked carcass of a deer. Nick was completely covered with the green, slimy, rotted stuff still rolling merrily, happy as a pig in a mud hole. I called him off, though it was way too late. As I continued long trotting, I set into scolding him, telling him that if he thought he was coming in the house, he had another thought coming. Right in the middle of my sanctified scolding, God started talking to me. He said, I did the same thing my dog does. He said, you roll in dead flesh all the time and then expect to come immediately into my presence. You lavishly dive into gossip, indulge in an offense you have towards somebody, wallow in your own self-pity, and then you come to church carrying that stench from all the dead flesh that you've been enjoying covered in, feeling no need for repentance, expecting me to just embrace you with open arms. Need I say more? By the time God got through with me, I was looking pretty much like Nick was during his bath in the backyard, kind of pitiful looking with my ears hanging really flat and low. Sometimes God's corrections can feel much like getting hit with the cold spring water from a water hose, an abrupt wake-up call. But no matter how uncomfortable it is, hunker down and take it, agreeing with God, because it's the only way to get the stink off and be welcomed back into His presence. This is Crystal Lyons and Cowgirl Logic.
Well, we just want to thank everyone for joining us tonight on She's Gone Country with Becky. I hope that you enjoyed the hour, and it is my hope that if you have a chance to please hop on to blogtalkradio.com and get a free account and listen to some of the other archives that we have in the Blog Talk, I think it's under blogtalkradio.com/4radio. And at this moment, just before we close out, I just want to do a quick thank you to our show sponsors, TobeAccountable.com, Trinity Wellness, and Trace Rios Trophy Buckles. We couldn't do the show without you, and we thank you so much for week in and week out being here for us. Our station sponsors are the Ambassador Program and B&B Builders and Remodelers. They are who bring the show to Blog Talk week after week. We've been on the air with Blog Talk for 3 years now, so thank you so much to the Ambassador Program and B&B Builders and Remodeling. Make sure that you tune in next week, and we will have a new and exciting guest to introduce to you. And again, thank you so much for joining us tonight on She's Gone Country with Becky.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
Trace Rios Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trace Rios, our only limit is your imagination. Trace Rios Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at TraceRiosSilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Do you ever feel like you're in mentality hell? You have your doctors and or your support systems in place, but you are still in pain. And then, who is your biggest abuser? Could it now be the one staring back at you in the mirror? To be or not to be accountable is really the question when making the journey to get past the pain of misuse. TobeAccountable.com, practical accountability coaching, specializing in mentality rehabilitation and restoration. A proud sponsor of Soul Sista Enterprise.
Hello and welcome to Women on the Edge.
This is Soul Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan.
Welcome to Women on the Edge. This is Becky Ryan. It is an awesome February the 3rd, and I am here with the lovely Maria DiGiovanni, my co-host and producer.
All good.
We're having some fun.
We are. How are you tonight?
Did everybody hear me going in there beforehand?
It's all right. Like I said, it's live radio. Tell your audience what you are, who you are about. We've got new listeners, and I'm excited about your show and where it's going.
My name is Becky Ryan. I am the host with my lovely co-host. I'm a co-host of Women on the Edge, and we are a technical background. Maria is definitely a living background. I like going into the trends. I've been doing the internet marketing for 15 years, which is a complement to what we're going forward on. And what we're doing is we are pushing very tense topics to the edge. We're taking our women, we're holding them accountable, and we're right now deep into post-traumatic stress disorder and why. And why does it have to still be here? And this is part four of us discussing it and all the issues. And last week we were covering post-traumatic growth. I mean, we can have growth. There is a new face to post-traumatic stress disorder. It's horrible. It affects so many. We also talk about accountability. And today we have news about post-traumatic stress disorder. Imagine that, Maria.
Of course.
Well,
go ahead. What'd you find out?
We have some, now, besides everything going on with the Super Bowl, I think there's going to be a whole bunch of Broncos out there having some post-traumatic stress disorder after losing so badly. But that's a joke. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not a joke. And I kind of wanted to go a little bit worldly here. There's some news outside of South Africa about police brutality. And they kind of named it the bad apple paradigm. I kind of want to talk about this. It very much relates in their story is very raw. It's been put out by news.com. And I put it on Women on the Edge on our Facebook, so please go on over there and check this article out for yourself, research it, find out more, because it's packed. We won't be able to cover it all. But they have had 30 years of severe police brutality that has been brought out, murders, people being assaulted. And what they basically said is, wow, some of our police officers, they call it the bad apple paradigm. South Africa is kind of under an investigation by not the police. The police kind of look the other way. People have been crying that this is a crime. It needs to be stopped. It needs to be looked into. And they went and they said, stop acting like brutality from these officers who have suffered post-traumatic stress disorder and violences that are unimaginable. We know that there's a link. They need help. And we keep acting like it's a new surprise. We have vets. We have people that are murdered. We have people that have been interrogated to extreme levels to their own death. And South Africa is being a voice, and they're saying, calling this bad apple, when there's psychological disorders that we need to be treating, and we've known about the severity of this for 30 years, and to on and off act like it's a surprise or isolated is wrong. And I want to commend them on it. They're bringing it to the United Nations. The article goes into a whole bunch of cases that have been presented and how they're not resolved, and how new cases, as the evidence is allowed to be open to the public, show horrific tortures. And at one of the cases, they had over 78 officers that were a part of a mass, horrible torture kind of a scene. And it goes into much more graphic detail in the article, and there are links to the stories. Why mm-hmm. Why do we have several? And to go and say that, you know, here we are at South Africa, why do we have it here? And they want to say, we need to look at post-traumatic stress disorder. We have facts. And post-traumatic stress disorder does not affect only the individual. It affects everybody around them.
Oh, yeah.
It's sickening to even read the article. Oh, yeah, were you going to say any more? Because I'm hoping that you do have some things. Because there's a new report right now out, and this is trending right now, and it is from Science Direct on the military veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, and they want to also add the word chronic hyperarousal. And they did find out that, which will lead us into an Atlanta study in a video I put out, that cities, any inner cities that tend to have high crime, tend to have kids 1 out of 8 with post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. However, the hospitals are not testing for this, even though they know it's there. And the reason for one of the Detroit ones was that we have an Episcopalian priest who comes here to comfort. We have 3 social workers and a couple interns. The average amount of people we think that are being affected are around 5,000 that will come through our hospital doors. We cannot implement post-traumatic stress disorder screening.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really kind of sad is as the doctors and the surgeons are even coming on board with this, saying, you know, we do need to treat this. I'm a doctor. John Porter, a trauma surgeon out of Jacksonville, Mississippi, said, if someone gets shot, and the side effect being that they probably end up leaving with post-traumatic stress disorder, I saved them. This is his own words. Did I really save them when I know they can't go out and function in life? If you ask John Porter, he's going to say he technically did not save their life when he's letting them go and have the rest of their life living with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a police one. Police ones and military ones, we kind of see it there. Military is trying to screen and try to find ways to prevent it or find it if it's there.
This well, I have a question.
Like, this is horrible.
Oh, no, I know. I have a question that just came, and this is a good thing to look up, so get your fingers ready to Google or whatever.
Do it slowly.
What are the studies saying about World War II veterans, and how did they handle post-traumatic stress disorder in comparison to Vietnam veterans, in comparison to what we have created with the Iraqi war?
Well, we already know with the Iraqi war, the vets, they estimated 2.6 were affected. However, 6 million that were attached to, and this is what we had talked about last week, there was a study out that 6 million ended up being affected by the post-traumatic stress disorder, that vets during the Vietnam War came out, and it was the wives, children, and everything else. So the 2.6, became 6 million that need to be treated for it.
Okay, but what about World War II? How did we handle it in the 40s and the 50s? In, you know, 40s,
well, I wanted to go, the Iraq two. Was 2.3 went over there. So we're probably going to be expecting close to the same amount as the Vietnam. I'm actually Googling this right now. I don't know if we've done anything for World War II.
I mean, think of World War II. Okay, my father was not, he was too old or young for World War II. So just a few years older, how did those, that generation deal with post-traumatic stress disorder? How did they deal with it? It's not like they didn't deal with it. They had to have dealt with it. But how did they deal with it?
Looking at them, I mean, even thinking of my father, my grandfather, my grandfathers on both sides, they didn't talk about anything. And my grandmothers were always, everything's just fine. What do you think?
Well, that's true. They didn't talk about anything. And so what's better or what's worse?
Not talking about it or talking about, you have also two different dynamics. During the 1940s and 50s, anybody in earlier, they most likely didn't get divorced.
Right. But why didn't they get divorced? Things were so different then. I mean, again, but this is also why we're doing the traveling back in time to a new generation. What was so different back then that we could handle things better, or did we handle things better, like such as post-traumatic stress disorder?
Until the 1960s and 70s, depending on which state you were in, you could not get a divorce without reason. And it would have cost a lot of money. So even if the people wanted to get a divorce, they would have had to prove that there was an affair. They would have had to have proved quite a few things. And domestic violence wasn't really even be brought up until the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So the choice between a 1940s woman who most likely was an at-home wife, that was her entire livelihood. I think she was going to make things work. And you talk about a woman who, and I'm just saying that the majority of the men that went to World War II and World War I and the Korean War were men. We definitely did have our nurses. We did have quite a few females over there. But it is mainly men. So men would come back home to a marriage. Both of them would have had to have been very strange for them to get a divorce. Granted, my great-grandma and great-grandpa did divorce.
Really?
Yes. And my grandmother said outright it was an embarrassment. And she said, but two people that shouldn't be together shouldn't be together. And she was born in 1907. She didn't get married until she was 28. She refused to. She had seen quite a bit of violence. She felt that it would be better for her to live a life, work, and become who she was and put down here for. Granted, she got married and lived until she was 92 as a very happy home wife and loved my grandfather to the day he died. But she said it was an extreme embarrassment. Nobody else, she would never tell people that they were divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So we have changed. Go on.
No, now that you brought that up. We found out later. Check this one out. This is cool. We found out later that apparently my mother's mother was married before. And so was my grandfather. And they had full families before, and then they got together and had 9 children.
Well, I do know my great uncle, who my grandmother's, same grandmother, brother,
yeah,
actually was married before he went to the war and had a child. And he, when he left, for whatever reason, when he came back, they divorced. I don't know. All I know is this, that he ended up remarrying and he had one son. And only my grandmother knew that both my great uncle and his wife had previously both been married and was sworn to secrecy never to tell about either one. My aunt even had a child before she had met my uncle Roy. So when they ended up getting put into a nursing home, she told Roy, "You've got to go and tell your son that he has siblings." And he said, "No, never, and never, not on my deathbed, never will he know." When he died, my grandmother told him, and he reconnected, and he was just elated that he had brothers and sisters, and he was floored that both of his parents, when he wanted to get a divorce, they appalled him. They were like, "What?" So I don't know. Can you believe he never knew, and neither one of them knew about the other one?
Wow.
So is it different? Yes. I also think that back then you had guys that would just walk out and leave, and women talked, and they accepted a different thing than together. And we're looking at trying to do more of a biblical marriage, and maybe the husband and wife come together and we're working on a plan. Yet we're also looking for a husband and wife that both have their own jobs, own have their own identities, both share in household duties. We're still changing and evolving on what the definition of family is. I don't know if it was good or bad, but it was what they had. And they did look this up. World War One. Thomas Salmon was the U.S. medical officer during World War One, and he labeled the condition that we will now later say is post-traumatic stress disorder, and he called it escape, or he called it intolerable circumstances.
Okay.
And he also called it escape from intolerable circumstances. And they said that it was a disease, and he felt that it would be a persistent neurosis of the brain that will continue with the soldiers after they have left their duties. There was no glorifying. This was not big. He said that almost anybody that, you know, you would say is shell-shocked is another term that they used during World War One and Two, meaning they had post-traumatic stress disorder. I've heard of shell shock.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of shell shock, too. I didn't know that that's what it was. Interesting.
No, nor did I.
Interesting.
So we had it. I don't. In here, it does not say how many. It does discuss looking at more current wars from the from Vietnam onward, that one out of six soldiers will most likely have some permanent damage that they will carry on with post-traumatic stress disorder for the rest of their life. One out of four will have mental disorders that will cause it to be very difficult for them to lead a life that we would deem viable.
Great.
And this is all from post-traumatic stress disorder combat.com.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, this is the internet.
Exactly.
It wasn't the government, so. But very interesting question. I guess we're still defining it. I mean, we're defining it in children. And Atlanta went and said, and I did post a video about it, and there's a PDF about how many kids that are in high crime, or any child that ends up being shot. Well, any child, anybody who gets shot ends up having the likelihood of post-traumatic stress disorder. They also found out that anyone who has been shot was not a believer of carrying a gun, found that their only safety and sanity in mind was to carry a gun, and seeing that they are hypersensitive, their words, they'd be more likely to shoot somebody else, and they were more likely to have an illegal gun.
All I know is that it's interesting because living in the environment that I lived in when I was young, the threat of being shot also causes such post-traumatic stress disorder, and so it really isn't, you know, getting shot. Getting shot is one thing. I think it's the threat of getting shot that they suffer from the most? And I talk from practical experience.
Very, very good. For my next thing, it was fear. Is that they talked about post-traumatic stress disorder, and they said the number one thing that they had to go into was to remove fear. And one of the doctors that is on there about post-traumatic stress disorder, it's the first video on the right, if you're on the Facebook, he goes in to show how people with post-traumatic stress disorder, their brain's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into some more detail, very heavy, very medical, and that they needed to annihilate this and calm this. They are, and this article came from using some very questionable drugs. One is called ecstasy, and they said that this is a drug that rages have, the techno places. It's an illegal drug. They have been using this 2 to 3 times a week on some of the severe cases, and they found significant improvement. And they said we really need to get people to visualize, and they give them computer games that the glasses make them feel that they are walking upstairs. If they had feared walking upstairs, if they fear gun situations or neighborhoods or dogs, cats, whatever it is, being safe at home, they put the glasses on and they give them some positive reinforcement, and they're finding that just doing it a couple times a week and having these computer games, they're able to calm down their hyper nervousness, aka fear.
Mm-hmm.
And when the fear has kind of been jolted from some trauma, some accident, some horrible event in your life, it's kind of a ticking time bomb waiting for one of those moments to happen. And this time, to survive it in a different way. Fear. Fear is very bad. Some fear can be healthy.
Fear.
Don't go off. Fear.
False evidence appearing real.
False evidence appearing real. Nice.
That is what
F-E-A-R.
Fear is.
F-E-A-R. Yes.
False appearing real. This is why, this is what bullies do, abusers do. My ex-husband did, I'll just effing kill you, put the gun in my face, start clicking the trigger. You know, you get to a point where you just kind of look at them and go, just do it already, because the fear of you doing it is actually killing me. So if you just feel so much better, okay?
Oh,
and
wow.
That's when I really realized that's all fear was, because I was staring fear straight in the face. And it's like, do it already. I mean, you do. It's false evidence appearing real. And if it ever had gotten to a point where you would have killed me, I would have gone to heaven. So, yippee, hallelujah, right? So,
yeah. But
yeah.
It's that fear. And the thing is that it's so quiet when it sneaks in.
Oh, yeah.
You don't realize that it's fear. You're rationalizing it. No, this would
yep.
be really horrible.
Yep.
The fear of somebody staying with somebody that is going through all of this and not standing up for what is right. And eventually when you see it, it explodes. I mean, when you finally say, just go ahead and do this, you're actually both uncovering your fears. His fear
yep.
of whatever he has there in your fear. Did it
yep.
change anything?
Oh, that's why you
did
just
it change
kind of
anything for your situation?
Looking at it that way, being not fearful of it, is that, or what do you mean?
Yeah, what did you feel like changed? Because I was wondering if you felt like it had to be a change within you, and you moved forward, or did it do anything for that moment? What would you suggest if somebody ended up doing that for one of our listeners? What should they say?
You know, it's different in every case. So what I tell people to do in that situation, especially when this is, usually when people are in situations like this, this isn't something that just happens. It gradually goes to this point, right?
Right.
And so when I'm speaking to somebody who is in the middle of this and it escalates to this point, you really have to stop, get out of your way, and look towards where you can find peace in the moment. And that's where you need to go, because that's where God is. God's in the peace. God is not in the chaos. And if you want to stay in the chaos, that's when you're going to continue the cycle of misuse. So when I have a woman or a man in front of me that's dealing with something like this, and they're in the situation where it escalated to that, you know, degree, you got to find where that seed of peace is and then go into it and stand there. And so, you know, all I know is when they puff up and get big, and if you think you puff up, you're going to get bigger, trust me, I'm Italian and Hispanic up against a cop. They get bigger and they get bigger and they get bigger. It doesn't matter how much you puff up, and I could puff up a lot. You following what I'm saying, right? Okay.
Yes.
And so really, you want to find that place of peace, because it isn't about you at that moment. It's about whether or not the enemy is going to come in and kill, steal, and destroy it.
And I really think that's wise. I mean, like a summary of this would be, if you're in one of these situations, and hopefully if you've ever had this situation, where would peace be? And try to go and think of where that place would be before it ever happens again, so that you already have an escape route.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's physically to go and find some shelters or different things, and you're believing and praying and hoping, and this is going to change, it'll never happen again, and you're in this cycle, and it would be nice to have a place to escape to. Look into it. Don't be confronting it. You're hitting something that post-traumatic stress disorder, they're hypersensitive. They're going to be more hypersensitive. Confronting is not going to be the best issue.
Yep.
Anybody that's really upset, I've never heard anybody go, oh, well, when I'm really upset and somebody gives me wise wisdom, I just immediately calm down and I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So usually they have to kind of go through the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because, again, it's our own ego that gets in the way. It's our own pride. It's our own, you know, whatever. Again, I had a reminiscence of all that with a voicemail that was left on my phone today. And as I'm listening to the voicemail, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to text this and I'm going to text that and I'm going to tell them this and tell them that. And then I finally realize it knew. Okay. I divorced that long ago. Okay. And I don't have to do that anymore because I divorced it a long time ago. And again, finding that peace, that place of peace, and that seed. That mustard seed. You've got 2 minutes.
Well, with that 2 minutes, I would like you guys, if you're experiencing any form of this through a friend, through a loved one, you question yourself, post-traumatic stress disorder is not something you handle alone. There are centers, counselors, there is help out there. Even if they're not testing you at the hospitals, like we just heard, that the United States is not testing for this. So if it is like a child, if you sense that there's somebody that's not all the way together on their emotions and certain things can trigger them to be irrational, it's time to go and seek help, find that safe place before you end up having it yourself. I mean, I don't know of anybody that's gone through domestic violence, sexual assault, any sort of trauma that doesn't end up having it themselves. Seek help. This needs to end. It's a big, huge issue. And with the remainder, I would like us to find out from people, what would you like to hear from us? We have therapists, and we're hoping to bring some people on here, people who've actually gone through this and can tell you more about post-traumatic growth. We want to push this to the edge. We don't need to be like South Africa and 30 years later, discussing the same things and not have anything accountable. History should show a movement of progression, history should not be showing the same. That would make us a reward. And right now, we have too many more cases that just keep showing their ugly faces. And I care about the people that are out there. We've got to push it. We've got to ask why. We've got to find out why anybody that goes through and has a gunshot, why they're not going through extra therapy. Even the doctors themselves say this. We're about to send people out mentally now, hurting, without help to heal.
Yep.
It's all very, very crazy. We're going to be here on Friday, guys. And we're going to be expecting to hear some questions, comments, and concerns. I'd love to even hear your own stories. Maria would love it. We could go and take this to a whole new level. We want to find out why. We're women on the edge. Let's get this there. Let's go in and change. And the baseline of all of this can change. There is help out there.
And we're going to find out more and talk more, and hopefully we'll have Sir Jim on our show with us on Friday morning, and we will take this to the next level. So we will see you next week on 4 Radio on Women on the Edge.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.